We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, a hi-fi masterpiece that will be looked back at for decades to come.
This week, we're talking about Dune Part 2 while eating KFC's Cheetza. It's not pizza, it's Cheetza.
What a tagline. I would love whoever came up with that. From IMDb, the plot summary of Dune Part 2 reads as follows. Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family.
And from KFC.com,
it's Cheetza, not pizza.
Cheetza, parenthesis, not pizza, features two 100% white meat extra crispy fried chicken fillets topped with zesty marinara sauce, melty mozzarella cheese, and crispy pepperoni.
Wow. I'm actually pretty excited for it. I think it's going to be good. I mean, I'm a big fan of the double down. This is basically just double down with pepperoni instead of bacon.
To paint a picture for the listeners, imagine a pizza, but without the dough. Now think of that top layer of cheese as a vast bed of sand. And these chicken fillets are a couple of worms slithering just below the surface. And that pepperoni on top, that's you and me. And we're thumping.
I love thumping that.
For worms.
I love that. The kind of text I get from Nathan regarding what food we should do before the Cheetza was announced, I woke up to a text from Nathan saying, oddly enough, another KFC item. It's their new potato bowl, mashed potato bowl with nuggets. And he said, this plus Dune 2, question mark? The potatoes are the sand. And that's how I started my day that day. But he's a creative man. He builds these connections. I think this is more of a stretch than the potatoes are the sand. But I'm going to let you have it.
This is the work that goes into this show.
High effort, high quality stuff.
Literally days ago, they then announced the Cheetza, which I read and first thought, what is the KFC Chizza?
Yeah. Weird.
It's spelled C-H-I-Z-Z-A.
Shiza.
I think where this is coming from, everyone's all about Riz. And I think Riz is 2023 and Chiz is 2024.
Oh my God. I don't like the word Chiz at all. I walked out of Quick Trip last night because we went to see this movie, and I had gotten some food, and they have like, you know, those pillars that places have so cars don't crash through the front door. They had a little art.
Blew right through it.
Plowed right through it to get to Dune 2. No, they had a little trifold thing around it, and each side had like the most obnoxious, like TikTok language advertisement for their shitty food. It was like the burger with the most Riz on one side, and the other side, I can't remember what it said, but I just like went and blacked out from rage. I was like, food doesn't have Riz, even a Cheetza.
Do you think Colonel Sanders has that chiz?
The guy's got Riz for sure. I don't know about that chiz, and I feel like chiz is a combination of Riz and something else, and I don't want to be a part of it in any sense.
We're about to have it. Now, Cheetza made its debut on KFC menus in the Philippines back in 2015. You and I are always reading about new fast food items that start internationally.
Yeah.
And we're like, why can't we just fly to, like, McDonald's Singapore and try all these foods?
Give it to me.
For once, KFC's doing it. They're taking a food that apparently has been a hit in Korea, Taiwan, India, Thailand, Germany, Spain, and they're bringing it here.
Love it.
According to them, you can now experience the global phenomenon in the U.S. for the very first time. So much like House Atreides in Dune Part 1, the Cheetza has arrived in an unknown land to fend for itself. Will it thrive?
Oh my God.
Or will it crumble under the pressure?
Wow. What a connection you've made there. I'm very excited to try this. I'm also going to save so much money on airfare by them bringing this to the States instead of me having to go try all these things. So I'm very excited.
Something tells me we have a whole lot to get into tonight, Kevin.
Yeah.
And before we get there, what do you say we do some Nimble News?
I would love to.
Nimble News.
Nimble News is the part of the show where we review all things new as quickly as we can do. Sometimes that means new music, maybe a new TV series, purchases, experiences, even new food or movies that we just don't have time for in our main discussion. Kevin, what you been up to?
A lot, actually. A whole lot. Nathan, I watched Self-Reliance on a flight to Boston. You were on the same flight. This is Jake Johnson's writing and directorial debut. That's Nick Miller from New Girl, for those of you who know him from that. I've always enjoyed him as an actor, and this was produced by The Lonely Island as well, so I went in hoping for a nice, fun film, and boy, let me tell you, it's exactly what I got. This movie is a perfect hour-and-a-half joyride. The cameos alone make it worth a watch. Don't look them up and spoil them. But this movie has a hilarious script, solid performances all around, and is just a good time. It brought me back to like the 90s and early aughts when we were getting movies like this all the time and everybody saw them because who doesn't like a good time? Now it's streaming on Hulu. I think it was originally a Hulu movie. Please go watch it so we can get more short comedic films made like this. It's just a fun little film. Nothing more, nothing less.
You're basically living that first class life.
Basically, with that movie.
In your brain.
It's a first class film.
Kevin, for some godforsaken reason, I saw the movie Argylle, which is the new spy thriller comedy from Matthew Vaughn, who's best known for directing the Kingsman movies in recent years. It stars Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell, who... Sam Rockwell, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Getting paid.
Is any paycheck worth the stench of Argylle on your resume?
Probably.
This movie is... It's not the worst movie that you've seen, but it's this combination of all of the absolute worst aspects of movies from the last 5-10 years. It not only tries setting up a cinematic universe that will not get made and no one will ever care about, it is at minimum 1 hour longer than it has any right to be. The runtime is obscene. It looks absolutely terrible. Despite costing Apple apparently $200 million to produce it, it's filled with the kind of tongue-in-cheek, winking-at-the-camera humor that might have been charming like 5 or 6 years ago, but it now feels so overdone and stale. We've talked a lot about how the last year or so has seemed to mark this real shift in the kinds of movies people want more of versus the kinds of movies people are sick of. Argylle is exhibit A of what no one is asking for at this point.
Yes.
And you and I saw Argylle in a theater.
Correct.
Together. And we are always telling people to see stuff in movie theaters. I think if there was a Fast Food Film Friends bingo board, the free space would say, you gotta see it in a theater.
Yep.
You know, I love that experience. I'll always advocate for it. Oftentimes, I'll be watching a great movie at home on my TV, and I'll think, man, what a shame I'm not watching this on a big silver screen, you know? Yeah. I sat in the theater watching Argylle, and I thought, what a shame I came all the way here for this. This movie that, at best, should be streamed at home where you can pause or fast forward or just let it play while you take a nap.
Yeah.
At worst, you can just ignore this movie's existence altogether because, statistically speaking, you probably don't have Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
So that's Argylle. Don't bother.
Yeah, I had some notes on it just as the worst looking movie I've seen possibly my entire life. Like visual effects wise, overall look. It is, like you said, at least an hour too long. Not many bright spots at all in that one. Nathan? I recently subscribed to Dropout TV for about $4 a month. And I was thinking about doing a NIMBY on this and trying to figure out how I would describe it. And it's pretty difficult. I've been following Dropout TV on Instagram for years and I always laugh at what I see. So I finally pulled the trigger and got a subscription for $4 a month. Like I said, not very much. Essentially, this is a production company that creates their own TV shows. They have a ton of variety and options. This is one of the few organizations that was allowed to produce content during the actor's strike because they pay people well, have good intentions, follow all the rules, everything like that. It's mostly writers, actors, comedians, a lot of which are relatively famous, and the majority of it is improv-based, which I fucking love. It's essentially the only thing I watch now other than movies. My top three picks for shows on this service would be Game Changer, which is a game show where the game changes every episode and the contestants have no idea what the rules are and just have to figure it out as they go. It makes for very enjoyable TV. Next would be Make Some Noise, in which three contestants have to do their best to imitate everything from a frog to the Netflix intro to 100 Batmans at once. And my most recent addiction has been Dimension 20, Fantasy High Season, which is a group of hilarious people just playing a D&D campaign set at a magical adventuring school, and it's phenomenal, especially if you're into D&D. They have a ton of other shows. I think, Nathan, you would love actually a show where nerds flaunt their knowledge of minutiae on various topics. There's a Dune episode specifically that I think you'd love.
I don't know why you say that.
There's a show called Very Important People in which one person's giving a total makeover to look like movie quality makeup, to look like an alien or a French Renaissance person. And they don't know what they look like until they are brought into a room, shown what they look like, and instantly sat down for an interview, 60-minute style, and have to make up their responses as they go. It is top-tier stuff as well. Overall, the entertainment I get from Dropout TV is worth so much more than $4 a month, and I cannot recommend it enough. If you like comedy, improv, nerdy shit, or just hilarious situations, Dropout TV is for you. Please give them $4 a month so they can keep making phenomenal shit.
Kevin, I'm here to tell the world about the first underrated gem of 2024, or it's underseen gem, I'd say. A movie called Out of Darkness. It is a prehistoric horror thriller about this small group of traveling humans or hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. They're being haunted by something in the dark. Mm-hmm. I went into this movie knowing very little. I booked a noon Saturday showing on opening weekend just because I had some time. I got a theater all to myself. Ooh. From the very first shot, it opens on this beautiful landscape at twilight. The group's huddled around a campfire. Mm-hmm. And the first title card comes up and just says, 45,000 years ago. And I instantly knew I was in for an hour and a half of my kind of shit.
Yes.
I love movies that are both movies that in terms of plot are so simple, but in terms of the ideas they're digging into are so rich and complex. And Out of Darkness is a movie about the most foundational questions of humanity and our place in the natural world. But it's also just a great edge of your seat horror movie that packs some real surprises and is so well made. The use of light and shadow is just stunning in some moments. And the sound design is so immersive and creepy. If you have the chance, mark that bingo board. See it in the theater. Mm-hmm. But judging by my lonely experience, it's probably not playing much of anywhere at this point. Mm-hmm. It'll be great however you watch it. I can't wait to buy it and watch it again at home. That's Out of Darkness. It'll probably be available on demand soon. Highly recommend it.
Very good flick. Very spooky sound design. Fully agree with you. Nathan, I was also going to do a NIMBY on Argyle, but we've heard enough about that movie and never should mention it again. So I'm going to do one on Dix, the musical. Mm-hmm. This was a movie that I've been very excited to see. Seemed right up my alley. Just absurd, hilarious, ridiculous. And it has Nathan Lane in it, who I just eat up everything with him on screen. I watched it at home. Missed it in theaters, unfortunately. I think it's streaming on HBO or something now, but gave it a watch. It's a tight hour 20 probably. Movie's a big miss, I would say. Not gonna be a hit anywhere. Not a hit with me, who was built to love a movie like this. Not a hit with seemingly anyone else either. It has moments that will make you laugh out loud. Objectively has moments that will make you laugh out loud, but the plot, the ridiculousness of it all is too much. And I rarely say that as a man who loves the absurd. I think it's worth a watch in some ways just to see some of these famous people in these ridiculous roles. Megan Mullally and Nathan Lane and the Sewer Boys alone are probably worth
watching. I love the casual mention of "and the Sewer Boys."
You'll know once you meet them.
My Sewer Boys.
You know once you'll meet them. But it is just, I think it's just, maybe the term would be too much. I think they're trying to do too much. I think it's worth a watch just to see how your brain reacts and see what your physiology does, because you're going to have some weird visceral reactions to this movie, but it's not very good. Not very good. So that was a big letdown for me. One of my last movies of 2023 that I was trying to get caught up on, and I don't know. I'm mixed on it, so watch it if you want. I don't give a shit.
I did see that in the theater. Which is really? An even weirder way.
Was it full of people?
No, it was one other person.
Oh, damn, I would have loved to. I think in a full theater it would have maybe landed.
I don't know. I completely agree that like it's somehow too much for people like us. I don't know who it's then for.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Nobody. Some real sick pervs out there, I'm sure. But yeah, just sad. I was sad about that one.
Kevin, my last one. I'll keep it brief. I tried thinking of all the right words to express what I want to say, and I don't have them yet, so I'll I'll have them, I think, by next year's top 10 episode, because this will certainly be on that list.
Wow.
I saw a movie called The Taste of Things.
Mm, yum.
And it hit me in a way that it is just very rare and very special. And all I'll say, so it's this movie, it's a romance about two people who love to cook. Mm. And it's a period piece. It's a French film, takes place, I think, about 100 years ago. If you have an appreciation for great food, whether that's eating or cooking or looking at...
I was wondering what your third one was going to be there.
You have to see this movie. Mm. You have to. If you like what I would call like process movies, which just watching someone do something really well, if that's satisfying to you, because that kind of stuff just mesmerizes
me. Like a Jiro Dreams of Sushi
type thing. Great example. Yeah. If you like that kind of stuff, you have to see this movie.
Mm.
If your love language is acts of service, or you love someone whose love language is acts of service, mm-hmm. you have to see this movie.
I'm 3 for 3 on this so far.
Yes. Kevin, the first thing I did when this movie ended is I texted you and I told you, you have to see this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been so certain that you will love something.
I think you sent me a text and it said, this plus KFC bowl, the chicken is the things.
It would honestly be, and I say this as someone who's been doing this show for many years, it would be blasphemous to do this movie alongside a fast food. I don't have the words.
Yeah.
I don't have the words. All I can do is recommend right now.
Okay.
It meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
And it's truly special. It's The Taste of Things. I don't think it's in theaters any longer, but I'm sure it'll be available to rent on demand soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a terrific movie.
I'm very excited to watch that. I'm going to watch that this weekend. Nathan, that's all the time we have for Nimble News. So let's move on to chatting about Dune Part 2 and KFC's. I have to prepare so hard to say chitza. It's very, very weird. KFC's chitza. I opened the bag that chitza was in, and the smell is not pleasant.
Let me smell this. Okay, so it comes in a cute little box.
Cute little box.
It smells weird.
Doesn't that smell weird?
All right, let's unveil.
Smells weird. Normally my dog comes up when we bring food out, and she's actually pawing at the door trying to get outside now.
Oh, my God.
Wow. So we got a small, not a large.
So picture a Lunchable pizza.
Somebody has taken the crust of that Lunchable, brushed all the toppings to the side, and then shit in the box.
This is the saddest thing we've ever opened.
I think the Burger King taco is up there with this. I mean, this...
The fact that we can't tell says all
that's
you
fair.
Need to know.
That's fair. What an absolute disaster and letdown. I'm appalled. We didn't even get enough.
This is...
No wonder it got here so fast.
It looks like it got here by someone who was doing donuts.
They were just running around.
There are 5 pepperonis, and one of them remains on the chicken.
Yeah, one.
The rest are slopped around the box. Check out our Instagram, because we will have a photo of this.
It's not going to photograph well. And I'm going to tag KFC in this and say, what are you guys doing? What are you doing?
So I guess we get a knife.
Should we order another one?
No. What are you talking about?
I mean,
Kevin.
Do we think?
Look at this. Look at this piece of shit.
I think this one.
You just said you want another one.
I want to give them another chance to get it right.
What are you talking about?
I feel like this was not made with love or care. And I feel like there's somebody there.
Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to set up a football right here.
Yeah.
Now you start way back there.
And I'll run up and kick it.
And I promise I'll keep it right here.
Okay. Perfect.
We need a knife.
I mean, the idea of this, it's fast food. You're supposed to get this, be able to pick up a slice like a pizza and eat it. Can you imagine handing one of these back to your kid in the back and being like, go nuts. And then it's basically a bowl of spaghetti and meatballs.
When have we ever used a full set of silverware?
I've never had a knife and fork in my hand in not in years. I mean, definitely not since we've started the show. This is astounding.
Okay, let's
get in there. Little pep, little cheese. The chicken looks pretty good.
This is just stupid.
It is cafeteria chicken parm. Like, bad cafeteria chicken parm.
I think that's too much credit.
Wow.
The cheese is not melted.
No.
It's straight out of a bag.
Mm-hmm.
This is dollar store ragu.
Oh, yeah.
And literally five pieces of...
It is definitely the
most disappointing pepperoni I've ever...
The cheese, the sauce, and the pepperoni is lunchable. It's literally the same supplier.
The description literally says, zesty marinara, melty mozzarella cheese, and, I quote, crispy pepperoni.
These are not cooked in any sense.
Not even slightly.
No. This is straight up lunchable pepperoni pizza on a chicken breast.
What the hell? Which,
in theory, I mean, I don't know. This is day one of them offering this, you know? I think they're going to get a talking to today after they get 19 orders refunded. You know what, though? Like, it's not good, but it's not terrible.
Well, yeah, so is, like, a Lunchable pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I was a child, and this was what was in my lunchbox,
yeah,
I would eat it.
Correct. That's the line we're setting.
The lowest possible bar.
Yeah.
I
Nathan is so repulsed that KFC is dishing this out. Like, he's just looking at it and shaking his head consistently since we've opened the box.
I think we need to have a larger discussion about... There's been many episodes in the last, like, year where we have to be forgiving that, like, okay, these companies are cutting costs.
Yeah.
You know, they're not as good as they used to be. I can't tell if we're getting old and just... Like,
have higher standards.
And we're just kind of, like, jaded with the shit they're serving
There's
us.
No way.
Or if the quality is actually getting a lot worse. We've had KFC so much on the show.
Yeah.
I have to look up right now everything we've eaten, like, from KFC. Because I don't feel like they've ever served us anything
this
close
bad.
To this.
No.
And it's not just that it's bad. It's so lazy.
It's very lazy. Very lazy. Like, they're clearly supposed to put it in an oven, and I think... That would melt the cheese and crisp the pepperonis or something. And they're skipping that step.
Here's what we've had in descending order. Oh, okay. I already have completely forgotten that the last thing we ate from there was the mac and cheese wrap.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also the laziest piece of crap.
We should have learned.
Before that, it was the double down, which is good.
Good.
Before that, chicken and donut sandwich.
Oh.
Amazing.
Otherworldly.
Chicken and waffle sandwich. Chicken big box meal. Classic. KFC's famous bowl. The potatoes are the sand.
The potatoes are the sand.
This is...
I'm telling you. I'm going to do us a favor. I'm going to do you a favor. It's not a favor to me, actually. Later this week, once they've worked out all the kinks in the operations and how to do this and the fact that it actually has to go in an oven before you give it to the customer raw with raw pepperoni... I'm going to try it again. I'm going to say Friday or Saturday this week. It's a Monday night right now. I'm going to try it again. And I'm going to report back. I'll send you a picture. Oh, this is a thing too. You know, delivery guy could have been swinging that bag around like
Kevin, this was never cooked.
It was never cooked, but the slop, the general.
I mean, the slop is one thing.
Yeah.
Like serve it in an appropriately sized container, I guess.
Well, it's supposed to be large. So they gave us a small.
The behavior you're describing of getting it again, there's a clinical term
insane
for that.
Insane.
And I need you.
I'm a hopeful boy. I'm a hopeful
restrain
boy.
Restrain yourself.
No, I'm going to do it again. I didn't hate the taste. Mine's gone. Yours. You're still working on yours.
I'm still working.
I've got maybe a lower bar than you when it comes to fast food. If it's chicken, I'm going to put it in my mouth and eat it. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't get it again. Maybe you're right. Can we look up like pictures that other people have posted about it? Like, if they all look this shitty? No, see, everyone else's are kind of crisp. Like, this one is actually chopped into pieces. Like, it looks like they should be on the website. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do.
If people at one location are just screwing up this hard? Does that say more about those people or about the corporate? There has to be a system to communicate this. Like, it has to be abundantly clear.
Should we call the police?
You put it in the oven.
Yeah.
If that's not clear, whose fault is that? I think the colonel is
probably
to blame.
The colonel. Yeah, let's get him on the line and see what he has to say about this. He's rolling over in his grave right now. That's for sure. I mean, I assume he's dead. If he was a real person,
arteries long exploded.
This should work. I mean, it's chicken parm with pepperoni. Essentially, it should work. What's? I don't know.
There's nothing you and I swoon for like chicken parm.
God, I do.
We're such easily pleased. Boys who think they're Italian.
Yeah.
And this is a disgrace.
Truly. My mother would be appalled, and she is not at all Italian.
We need to send the five families to KFC HQ.
Straight to the one this came out of, so they can never do it again. We'll send Marty Scorsese's mom there, and she can show them how to make a nice meatball and how to do this right. I also bit my lip while eating that. Terrible.
I think your body was instinctually trying to get you to stop.
Probably.
At any cost.
Probably. Unlike your body, which was magnetically pulled to the theaters to see Dune 2.
For years, I felt it. So, when you and I reviewed Dune Part 1, which was about 2.5 years ago.
I'm so nervous for this segment you're about to do here, because here's what's happened. Know you pulled quotes.
You were quite underwhelmed by that movie.
Mm-hmm.
In recent weeks, you've just been talking like you're such a fan.
Okay.
And I have the number of people who've talked to me and said, I thought Kevin hated Dune.
Yeah.
You're either gaslighting yourself or everyone else around you.
No, here's what happened. I watched it last weekend. I've obviously just been hyping it up. You love it, so I post on the joint fast food about how much you love it and the buzz. It's the biggest movie to come out in a long time that people are excited about. So I'm going to post about any movie that's big, regardless of whether I'm personally super pumped for it or not.
Uh-huh.
And then I rewatched Dune 1 like a week ago, maybe less than that. Yeah, less than that even. Watched it at home and really enjoyed it a lot more than my theater going experience. And I'm not sure why. I don't know why. I think I inherently have a don't like stuff that other people like type of gene in me.
You?
Yeah. And that plays a part in it, but I usually can get past that. And like rewatching it, I felt like I was watching it for the first time at a lot of points and like really took in the beauty of it all. I think, and this will be an issue tonight too, I think my main issue is Timothée Chalamet as Paul Atreides. I don't think he's good. That good, which I know you probably jump across and smother me with a chitza for saying that, but I think he's the one that takes me out of it. And so I already knew upon rewatch, I already knew that he's not for me and kind of I don't buy into his lines and everything like that. So I think I enjoyed the rest of it more. And then that got me really excited for Dune 2 because I actually enjoyed Dune 1. And right after watching it, I was like, I think I really panned it on our podcast, Dune 1. I'm going to go back and listen. And you were like, Kevin, do not do that because I've got things to talk to you about. And I'm just like, I probably said, I'm not one for hyperbole. So I probably was very casual about my hate for it.
I'm not here to like pit you against your past self. I think it's a wonderful thing that you go into it with an open enough mind that a couple of years later you can reevaluate.
This will be just like you for Chitza 2.
God.
A double-decker Chitza.
I'm not trying to relitigate that, but I do want to start this conversation with a clip.
Perfect. I can't wait.
Kevin, I'm going to hit you with a little food analogy in the form of a question. So,
what?
Dune Part 2 is coming in 2023.
Yes.
After seeing Dune Part 1, do you feel like you ate a full meal and you have another meal from the same chef to look forward to? Or do you feel as though you ate an appetizer and now you're left waiting 2 years for the main course?
I feel as though I sat down at a restaurant, the chef brought the food out, presented it to me, told me all about the plate, all about, the bed of sauce it was sitting in. All about the ingredients that went into it, none of which were that interesting, and then let me smell it, and then took it away from me without letting me get a bite. I had it in my hands. It was
in my mouth, but it didn't touch any of my mouth. It was just in the space of my mouth, but it didn't touch any surface of my mouth. And he said, no. And he took it away, went back to the kitchen and said, 2 years, then you can eat this.
So you feel as though you ate nothing.
Correct. Correct. Wow. But I learned a lot about what I'm going to eat. I know everything about what's going to be in that meal in a couple years. But I was left hungry. And I got a little crabby because I was hungry. I think the kids call it hangry.
Here we are in 2024. After having had the meal, my question to you is simple.
Yeah.
Do you give your compliments to the chef?
I'm excited for the first course. This appetizer has been great now. I'm excited to get to the first course in Dune Messiah. First off, I mean, what an analogy. I'm a wordsmith. I want a supercut of every ridiculous analogy I've made on this podcast. But no, I still do feel that way about Dune 1. It sets the scene for Part 2.
Do you actually feel like Dune Part 2 is just an appetizer? You actually think that? Because this moment will be used against you in 3 more years.
I think it's more of like a first course and like a 2 or 3 course meal, maybe. I don't know how many of these things are going to crank out. I have no idea.
That doesn't matter. Don't imagine they never made another one.
Yeah, okay.
Is this a meal? Or is it an appetizer?
Yeah. It's like a chitza, I'd say. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, it's a meal. It's much more of a meal than the first one in terms of the plot and storytelling that it contains, I would say. However, I think if I had to choose one Dune to have and like be able to watch, I probably would lean a little Dune, just Dune, not
Part One.
Part One. I think I like Part One more, and maybe it's just because in Part Two, you know, you're back on the same planets. You're not as amazed by like the robots and ships and things like that are coming out. But yeah, I don't know. This is why I wanted to watch. Immediately, I wanted to watch Dune 2 again because I was like, I think I have just a one watch bias against these that I need to overcome. And I want to sit down and watch it again because this movie is like the first one, fucking breathtaking to look at, astounding to look at. I mean, the cinematography is insane. The scale is insane. There's several parts that I know we'll cover in detail that just literally take your breath away. But at the end of this, too, you're thinking, okay, we've moved the needle a lot, but there's so much that they've dropped at the end of this. You're like, what is going to be next? You know, I don't want to say any spoilers or anything like that, but...
Yeah, I mean, suffice to say, there's a long book series.
Yeah. And how many books are there?
So, I don't even know, but Dune 1 and Dune 2, the movies, they make up the first Dune book.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
All right.
But, yeah, I think this movie is an absolute feast.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you and I, we just had a great trip with some friends where we'd have some meals where, like, instead of having entrees, we're going to order literally 15 apps and entrees and we're going to pass some plates around. Yeah, we're going to eat everything.
Yeah.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
And this movie was that to the fullest degree for me. But the best part, here's the analogy I would put.
Okay.
You say you had a meal and there's maybe more meal to come.
Yeah.
I say I just gorge myself. And then the server came with a dessert menu.
Yeah.
And I said, I got some room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got some space in here.
Nathan, you've been in love with Dune and so excited for... There's no doubt in my mind. Walking into the theater... Actually, not even for the last 3 years, I've known that like seeing this film would be probably the best day of the year for you.
And to be clear, as much as I love that first one, I think this is a huge step above in essentially every way.
Wow.
I think that it is so interesting how the first movie is so... It's about soaking everything in.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's about the dreams, and it's about the world, and it's about... It's like a first-hand experience. Like, Paul Atreides is an audience surrogate character. You're kind of seeing all this through his eyes. And the second one... is a true epic.
Yeah.
And that word's overused, but like it is an epic in a way that I haven't seen in a long time.
So it's kind of like Dune 1 is Out of Darkness and Dune 2 would be like The Croods or something. A much more, you know, deeply involved plot and story.
There was a moment when I was watching Dune Part 2 that I know you're going to laugh and I'm sure listeners will laugh and I'm not joking. I thought to myself, I am so sad that at some point this is going to end.
Yeah.
I could watch this movie forever.
I could tell. Every time I glanced over at you in the theater, you were just beaming, other than the guy who was annihilating an icy in the seat next to you, which I could not believe or understand.
I think that goes to show how
locked
enraptured I was in this movie, because it was the worst viewing experience in terms of my seat neighbor I've maybe ever had.
Yeah.
And I still think this movie is outstanding.
All right, let's talk favorites, or you know, best parts. What was it?
We gotta wait till spoilers and talk about parts, but I think components, I think you are right that you and I are on a different page in terms of Timmy C's performance, because I liked him in the first one. I was not wowed by him. I thought he was a good fit, but that I was just ready to see what he could do.
Yeah.
And you and I we've had Timothy Chalamet's stock since the beginning.
Oh, we're early
since
investors.
Call Me By Your Name. Yeah. You and I went all
in. He was just running out of a garage. We bought stock.
And I wouldn't say he saw like missteps, but he's had some movies where I'm like, is he the one? Like, is he like the star that I hope that he is?
Yeah.
This is the movie that I fully cemented my opinion that he's the guy.
There were some lines he delivered in this movie where the theater, myself included, like laughed. One of like, you know, go watch my mom or something like. Him angry doesn't work for me, and him serious doesn't work for me, and his chemistry with Zendaya also does not work for me.
I disagree so completely. Yeah. I think the chemistry is fantastic. I think it is a genuinely great romance, this movie.
There's like no... Okay. There's no... There's barely any romance in it. Like, they have a few scenes together. Most of the time, it's just like brooding looks from across rooms at each other. But I guess, you know, romance is romance. Everyone's got their own flavor for it. I don't know. Maybe it's because of Wonka. The making chocolate, of course, that line has stuck with me so much that everything he says, I picture it in like a weird way like that. And it just...
You're saying because you didn't like him in Wonka.
I liked him fine in Wonka. It's just, I think the way he delivered his lines in Wonka have made me think of him as like a... Some felt like they were delivered the same way as Wonka. And it took me out of his character as like Paul Atreides. I know he doesn't have like an accent or anything like that, but he's a little more like sing-songy in that. And I don't know. I just didn't think he was top tier. I think there were a few scenes like towards the end where he's great. Yeah. But throughout most of the movie, it's just, I can't buy into him as like this leader type character. I think it would be hard for him to like rally a large amount of people together. But
I would love to have some kind of imaginary experiment where you could like mind wipe all your Timmy
C. I would too.
Past experience with his movies and to see what you would think then, because I didn't care for him in Wonka.
Yeah.
I didn't care for him. Remember like Don't Look Up? He was in that.
Yeah.
Like
he's kind of funny in that.
He's been in some stuff where I'm like, I don't know if he like really has the charisma. Like he has the mystery, he has the looks, I like him.
Yeah.
But this is the first movie where I feel like his job in this movie is to carry the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a true hero's journey. He is no longer the audience surrogate.
Yeah.
Like it is like this rise of a messiah. And you're seeing such a transformation from beginning to end. If the performance doesn't work for you, then
I think part of it is the performance doesn't work for me. I think one of my first notes I wrote down was that I think the writing in this one was worse than the writing in the first one. And I think it's partly that. Like, I feel like there were times in Dune Part 2, where they were, I don't want to say they were going for this, but it seemed like, you know, those kind of like Marvel, like, sneak a laugh in here, sneak a laugh in there.
There's
moments.
A lot more humor. A
lot more humor.
One, which is surprising.
Very surprising. And it's not done poorly. But I just was kind of like, that's not, I don't know, it didn't feel right for me. And this is, again, why I immediately wanted to watch it again. Because I was like, is that taking me out of it? Is it because I have been watching Timmy C and talking about Timmy C for 7 fucking years with you? I don't know.
I think I personally had to warm up to that because at first it's kind of jarring because you're like, this isn't the tone that I remember.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting how there's a few aspects of this movie that are surprisingly very different from part one.
Very.
Like, and it makes you wonder, like, is this the filmmakers, is it them just deliberately shifting gears to differentiate this one? Or is it like they saw the finished product and were like, I wish it was more XYZ.
Yeah.
Because not just the humor, but also like the way it looks.
Yep.
It is so much more, it's more like rich in its color, more it's vibrant.
Way more.
But also like the, you know, I loved the Greg Fraser cinematography from
Holy
the first
shit.
One,
yeah.
where in both Dune 1 and The Batman, he used a lot of like very experimental depth of field with lenses. And like there was stuff that was blurry. And this one is, it looks more like a traditional action epic. Like,
everything in focus most of the time.
And I understand that choice. Like, there's just so much going on that to have things that are like visually hard to interpret would just be too much to keep track of, maybe. Because the first one, like I said, it's more of like, it's like a tone poem. It's like, it's blurry because like you're adjusting to this world.
Yeah.
But this one is like, there's just too much to mess around with that stuff.
Yeah.
I think we should say, before we get into spoilers, like, give recommendations to people who either liked or disliked the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would you tell to a friend who maybe wasn't so hot on the first one?
Rewatch the first one at home on a big-ass TV. I'm trying to remember my theater-going experience for the first one, too. Like, did we see that together? Did we see that on, like, an opening weekend?
I think we went,
probably. I think I liked, and I think this one's better seen in a theater. I think Dune 1 is better seen at home because it is like, it's almost like a meditation on these worlds. Like, you're just sitting there taking it all in and absorbing it. So rewatch it at home. See if it changes your tune. Either way, go see this movie because it's fucking gorgeous to look at for 2.5 hours. I mean, it's a good movie. Objectively, it's a good movie. I don't know. I think I like the first one better. But yeah, go see it. Obviously, go see this movie. See it on the biggest screen you can. If you live near an actual IMAX, fly Nathan and I out there so we can see it on a true IMAX screen, please. But yeah, if you didn't like the first one, give it another shot, because I really didn't at first. And I was shocked. Like, when it ended, I looked at Haley and Aiden, and I was like, whoa, that was a killer movie. Like, I was like, and it blew my mind how, I don't know. Second viewing is necessary, I think, for people who didn't like the first one.
I think if you watched the first one and you thought, I wish it was more blank. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard many criticisms. You had many of them, but like, I wish there was more story or character development. Or some people say, I wish there was more levity. I wish there was more color, more visually going on.
Yeah.
All those things, Dune Part 2 has more of.
Yeah.
Every one of those.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, it sounds like a knock to say it's like a more conventionally appealing blockbuster, but it's not. Like, it is, to me, an excellent version of that. It's the kind of movie that I think, let's say, first of all, you and I saw this. They had this like early AMC screening where we saw it Sunday night, and we're recording this on Monday, and it comes out in a few days nationwide. I think they knew what they were doing when they did that, because they know the word of mouth is going to be like glowing on this, and that already, like, everything I'm seeing on social media is like random people just being like, holy shit, I can't believe this. And then people who haven't seen it are like, why can't I watch this yet?
Yes. I've never seen, I think, the one Sunday night showing at like all theaters, you know, is such, because every seat was packed. And I saw so many people posting pictures of like, they're completely sold out theaters. And these are people who are going to talk about the movie online with their friends. I saw a lot of things today, like, you know, people posting like angry reactions of like, can we kill all the people who saw it last night so they don't spoil stuff for us? Or like, how do these people get into that? And, I think it's a genius move, absolutely. And I'm very glad that we were able to sneak in there.
And we don't know yet how this is going to perform, like, in the masses, how much money it's going to make. I'm so confident it's going to be a smash hit.
Yeah.
If only for the reason you're saying, which is that I think a lot of people who see this are going to say, I have to go again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're going to tell their friends. And it really is. There's something about this kind of movie that people understand you have to go.
Yeah.
It's like Oppenheimer last year.
It is.
It's like Dune 1 when it came out.
It is.
You just have to go.
And I think if I'm going to see it again, people like you are going to see it 5 to 9 times.
Trust me, Kevin.
I don't even want to think about how many hours this year you're going to spend watching Dune Part 2. But I think it's going to do very, very, very well. I mean, I haven't seen many bad reviews. All the reviews are very nitpicky, and that's what happens when your movie is objectively and outright solid and good. Is people are going to nitpick, like myself, but you can't argue that it's not amazing to watch on a giant screen. It just is, objectively.
As much as I love movies so much, and you do too, mm-hmm. I don't think of you and I as like franchise fans for the most part, you know? Like I had Star Wars growing up and you had Harry Potter. That means a lot to you. Those are two series that you and I are each kind of very forgiving of and get excited about.
Lord of the Rings, sure.
Lord of the Rings, yeah. But there's, for a lot of people, the things they get most excited about are like the Marvels. Yeah. And I mean, the franchise, it's the biggest stuff. And it's exciting to be part of those big events. Mm-hmm. For me, this movie, I mean, really the series, the two of them, it has absorbed me in a way that nothing has since I was a kid.
I've witnessed it firsthand.
I'll just be... We watched this last night. So like, but like, I would just like stand in there in the shower.
Rock
or hard. Like... Or I'm just like sitting there, like intending to make lunch. And I realize I'm just standing there thinking about the movie.
Thinking about Austin Butler and... Man. No, it's... I've thought about this movie a lot today, too, because it is... There's so many images that... And so many things you see in this movie that are just so striking. Like, again, we'll talk about them all in spoilers. But there's visuals that just... You know they're going to be, like, on dorm room walls for years, probably. Because they're gorgeous and cool and...
And truly iconic.
Iconic is a good word for those, yeah.
As much as this movie reminds you of other movies, it is so completely its own thing.
Yeah. Greg Fraser should be a billionaire, I think.
It's my favorite cinematographer. His work in the last few years is just, he just pushes the bar
astounding.
Every time.
Truly astounding.
Between his work and then like Hoyte Van Hoytema shooting like Oppenheimer. Like,
yeah.
They just, this, I love so much. Every time we reviewed one of these movies, I feel like I gush about this style. But, like, Dune Part 1 felt like a glimpse of a new style to come that was a breath of fresh air. By now, like, The Batman, Oppenheimer, Dune, this is now the era we're in. And
it's a good era.
Whether, like, the Hollywood studio system could just collapse next year and we don't get any more of these. Or maybe it's going to flourish and we're going to get 20 more movies that look and feel like this.
Yeah.
Either way, this period of time, I think, is a little golden age of blockbusters that are so tactile. And also, it's that tactility, that texture, paired with the moral complexity and like the darkness, the emotion, the sincerity... It's all of that put together that just, I really feel like fully surrendered to it when I'm in the theater watching it.
It connects. It just connects.
I'm just so, like, the 2010s, there was a certain kind of movie that was very successful. And a lot of those movies were great.
Yep.
And I'm glad that we had that time. I'm so much more into these movies right now.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's cool to be like we said earlier about like, getting old and you eat a shitty fast food item and you're like, oh man, is everything getting worse now?
Mm-hmm.
Like part of aging is just like everything around you getting progressively worse.
Yeah.
And this is my greatest passion in life is as an art form at the best it's been in probably decades.
Yeah.
At least in my personal opinion, like this stuff, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It just makes me so... It makes my heart feel so full. A movie like this.
I do agree. I absolutely agree. It's an exciting time to be a fan of movies.
Before spoilers,
yes,
I want to ask you. This movie's getting a lot of comparisons to some of the greatest sequels of all time. Like people are throwing around Empire Strikes Back and The Dark Knight, Godfather Part Two is up there. Do you think this has a seat at that table? And why or why not?
That's a good question, Nathan. That's a good question. Yes. And I think the reason is that, you know, this is a sequel that goes at its story in a very different way than the first movie. And I love sequels that aren't just, you know, a copy paste, fill in different details, fill in different people for the sequel, like a lot of them are. This is a, I mean, if you were to show Dune 1 and Dune 2 to groups of people who have no idea what's going on in the world and say, like, do you think these were made by the same people? I wonder how many people would say yes, because I think a lot of people would be like, there's a distinct difference in the style and structure of these movies that I think maybe it's made by somebody else. But as a fan of variety in general and just trying new things, one of my favorite hobbies, I think it gets a seat at that table. Do I think it beats a lot of those movies? No.
But, I mean, we saw it last night.
Yeah.
We can't say
give me
that
some
yet.
Time. Yes. Give me some time to process. Give me a couple more viewings. But I think it's definitely going to be at least like a dog, you know, waiting for scraps at the side of the table if it's not at the table. But I think eventually it's going to get a seat at that table for sure. Because it's, A, it's going to be huge in the box office. B, it's already ranked as like the best movie on IMDb, which is ridiculous. But who knows? Maybe it will be. But yeah, I think it is solidly at that table. I assume you would think it's at the head of that table, telling the others to bow down to it and kiss its ring.
I would not say head of the table, but I do. I absolutely believe that this is on that level. I think that the feelings that we're talking through right now, people talk through those same feelings after every one of those sequels.
You're right.
Like Empire Strikes Back, a lot of people hated that movie and when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's only in the years since that people can look back on it and be like, oh, that's like an actual masterpiece.
Yeah,
I think that Dune Part 2 expands upon the story in every way. It does something that is so rare, which is that it pays off so many setups from the first one, but without feeling like fan service-y or like obvious. Like there's not moments where you're like, oh yeah, duh, that was going to happen. Or like, oh, that moment's there just to make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
There's moments that on paper sound like kind of just like cheesy, like your average like sequel setup and payoff.
Yeah.
But the way they're executed really moved me.
Yeah. This is a very surprising movie. You don't know what's going to happen next throughout this whole movie. And I think even if you've read the book, you would be caught off guard with how they approached a lot of those things.
That's what I've heard, is that it diverges from the source material more than the first one did.
Good.
And I just think the most important thing is that Dune Part 2 is a terrific standalone movie. Like, you have to watch the first one to understand the table setting for this. But you can just keep watching the second one and just enjoy it. Again, like Empire Strikes Back, you have to see A New Hope, but you can then watch it as its own. And it's
you have to go to the restaurant, have the chef bring out the plate, let you smell it, and then take it back before you can really enjoy that plate the next time around at Dune Part 2.
Maybe we should have just smelled the chizza, which was already bad.
The smell was the worst part. The smell was truly...
I wouldn't say worst.
The appearance or the taste? If you could rank those three,
because
appearance,
thing is,
taste, and smell.
When you smell it, you think, not good, but also maybe there's still something there that I'm yet to experience.
Hope still
and
lives.
It's in that moment that you need to stay.
Yeah. And then you open the box and vomit everywhere just by the looks of it.
I think this movie, you know, it's not even March, and I think this is going to probably be the movie of 2024.
I know it's going to be your movie of 2024. We've
got a lot to get into.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's get a word from our sponsor. So you heard about the new chizza from KFC, and you thought to yourself, pizza on chicken? Boring! Instead, try Red Lobster's latest creation, Squeezza. Everyone loves pizza, and everyone loves raw squid. So we put them together and made Squeezza. There's nothing like warm marinara and mozzarella draped over a cold, slippery tentacle. Order an extra large for the whole family to enjoy. Squeezza. It's like pizza from the ocean. And we're back, and it's time for our spoiler snack segment, the part of the show where we spoil Dune Part 2 and we eat or drink a snack.
Yeah.
This week, we're actually indulging in something that I have been trying to taste for a long time now, and
I've
just been saving to do with you.
No idea it existed.
We've eaten all of KFC's desserts, but they have their own exclusive flavor of Mountain Dew called Mountain Dew Sweet Lightning. And from KFC.com, Sweet Lightning is an out-of-the-sky refreshment lit up with a punch of peach, and a touch of honey flavors.
The peach really, I mean, it smells like a sweet tea almost. It smells exactly like sweet tea. I didn't know KFC had its own Baja Blast. It's neon orange, which is a little off-putting.
It's giving like college dorm mixed drink.
Yeah, WAP for sure.
Cheers.
Hey, let's get into it. That is liquid peachos, is what that is.
Would you ever guess that that's Mountain Dew?
No. That's a sweet, like a carbonated sweet peach tea.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I don't hate it. And, you know, I think it would pair really nicely with the chizza.
Listen, like just douse your whole face in it to get the taste of the chizza out. That's good. I mean, it's no Baja Blast. I'm not going to go to KFC just to get it.
Yeah, it's certainly not. I wonder how many people are ordering these day in and day out.
I don't know. I didn't even know they existed, and I'm pretty up on it in terms of fast food. And I love Baja Blast, so you would have thought I'd put some time into looking up their other iterations. But
actually, if you keep reading on their website, it says that it's available exclusively at KFC. Dew is fixing up a true-to-its-roots soda that will brighten each and every one of your taste buds.
Wow. Do all your taste buds feel brightened? Mine jumped off my tongue after the chizza, so I gotta get them back.
They are receding into the sand right now.
Something about it doesn't feel right. I don't know what it is. Maybe the color.
Is it weird that there's no bubbles?
Well, it has been sitting for quite some time, and there was ice in it, which is why I suggested straining it when it arrived. But mine has bubbles. You can see bubbles. You got the top of the drink. We split one drink here.
It's actually funny to think that before the ice melted, this was even more concentrated.
Just super. Oh, yeah. It would taste probably too much.
It's already.
It'd probably be too much.
Already tastes quite syrupy.
It does have that syrupy aftertaste. Yeah, it's gut rot for sure. Yeah, pour a gallon of that in a jug with a bottle of vodka, you're in business for sure.
So can you explain what you saw on the KFC menu for their drinks?
Oh my god. Oh. So I went to order the, what is it, Sweet Lightning?
Yes, Mountain Dew Sweet Lightning.
And I clicked in and it said small, medium, or KFC bucket, beverage bucket. And I thought, there's no way they're filling up a KFC bucket
and
with soda.
And I jumped over to your phone and couldn't smash the bucket faster.
Yeah. And it looks like a, it's kind of a 3D illusion. It's basically a giant juice box, but they've printed on it. You know how, like, if you were to draw a bucket on a sheet of paper, you'd do, like, an oval on top, so it looks like there's depth to it?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good illusion, I will say, on their part. Because it took me a few pictures. I looked up some pictures. Took me a few before I realized it was just a Ziploc bag. But it's got a nozzle coming off it that's just a massive hog. Just huge. I mean, I'm talking probably 8 inches in diameter. I don't know. In circumference. Apologies. So I guess it's for pouring, not for individual consumption. Which, great job on clarifying that it's not for one person, KFC. It's got like a... Reminds me of like if you go in an office and somebody brings in coffee for like the team, you know, kind mm-hmm. of that situation for
and
pouring.
A joke, they do Sweet Lightning instead.
KFC beverage bucket. If you ever get a KFC beverage bucket, send us a picture. We will reimburse you.
Tell you what, when you go back to KFC to try another chizza,
yeah.
Can you ask them to fill a bucket with chizza?
That'd be good. I'm going to see if I can get an actual chicken bucket filled with Sweet Lightning. That's my goal.
No lid.
And I'm going to bring a custom-made lid from home. Just saran wrap the top and stick a straw on it and put it in my cup holder.
I would like to dump this.
Yeah, I'm going to dump the rest of mine. It's way too sweet.
So I don't think we could possibly go through the entire plot of this movie.
No, let's
not. There's so much plot. It feels like at least two movies worth of plot transpires. The last half of this movie, it's both like overwhelming amounts of stuff going on, but also did you feel like it was too much? Because I felt like I was just riding the wave.
I honestly, when I realized credits were about to roll, I was like, that flew by.
Yes.
I thought for two, and it's like 2 hours, 40 minutes.
Let's see.
2:46, I think.
2:46. Yeah.
Hey. That is insane to me, because I literally, it ended and I went, no way. Like, is there a 20-minute after credit scene? So I think the amount of stuff happening is perfect. I mean, honestly, really well laid out. But yeah, I when we were driving home, I was like, there's no way it was that long. Like, it flies by.
And how many action blockbusters can you say that about? We're like, there's always that like third act, like, yep. Okay, let's go. We're going to do this now. Mm-hmm. Not for a moment.
I think it helps that like the third act of this one is very, there's a ton going on. So you are really, you know, scooting to the edge of your seat and involved in it. And it kind of builds as it goes, really. Like, hey, I guess it starts off pretty hot.
I do think it builds. Like, the first probably half hour is just like Paul and his mom with the Fremen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some Harkonnen stuff cut in between, but
I loved that shit. The first like 10, 15 minutes of this movie, I loved.
I don't understand how they can, what they do to shoot, like, it's the Harkonnen who, like, jetpacking up the cliff, right?
Honestly, that is, I think, one of my favorite moments of the whole movie is when they say, they sense the sandworms are coming and they're like, we got to climb the mountain. And they just, like,
and all they're doing is floating, right? Yeah. But there's something about the way they do that floating in these movies that doesn't look stupid.
No.
That kind of thing would look dumb and cheap and old in so many movies. And I think it's maybe just that they're actually lifting people. It's not just like they're CGI compositing people. I don't know what it is. But
I don't know either. But it works so... And it's, like you said, it shouldn't probably, but like... The way they kind of like, you know, use the rock every now and then to like slightly adjust their course and how it perfectly gets them. Like, it is, I wonder how many meetings they had about like, no, they should be going faster. No, they should be going slower. Like, to get to that perfect pace, because it's truly, it's not like a shoosh to the top. It's like a, all right, I'm going up.
Like, when you see like a Jedi force jump, or you see like any superhero fly in any way, not for a second do you think, like, whoa, are they actually floating?
Correct.
But in this, you're like, I'm watching another world where this tech exists, and they're just filming it.
And that, I think it was, because we see in the first movie, we see people coming down, you know, and you think, cool, what, however they're doing that. Never in my mind did I think they could also go up. Like, I never, I thought, so when they first started doing that, I was like, whoa, who would have thought they had the tech to go up, too? like it's just the imagery, because it's this gorgeous desert shot. It's this huge cliff, and you have like 10, 12 of these guys just all kind of going up at different times and different like parts of the shot. But holy shit. I was like, ah, fuck, this movie's going to be good. Right. Like right off the bat, that part top, I think third note I have is that floating up the mountain, because that was just a fucking cool thing to watch, Nathan.
And I think the like sneaky MVP of that whole portion of the movie is that vivid, saturated color. Yes, the way that the sand and the sky is so much richer than it was in the first movie. The colors are so, they're subdued. Mm-hmm. They're muted. Things are very neutral. Mm-hmm. There's lots of sand in the air, and it's like hard to make things out, and it's very tan and washed out. And in this, just watching anything happen on that gorgeous orange sand is just beautiful.
Really, truly is. Even them just running in the sand. I was like, I want to go to a desert. I like told Aiden, I was like, I want to take you to Jordan, and I want to go to like the root, like those, you know, the temple that's carved into a cliff. I was like, this makes me want to just go there. Like, I want to be there.
What's cool about that temple and a cliff? That's actually where they hide their nukes.
I believe it.
92. No one checks there.
Family nukes. Too obvious.
So this picks up right where part one left off.
Yeah.
Where they're carrying the body of the guy that he killed.
Yep.
And then they making their way into like the Fremen siege, and everyone's essentially, some Fremen believe that he's the chosen one. Mm-hmm. Some are skeptical.
Some really believe that he's the chosen one. Javier Bardem, is it Stiegler? What's his name?
Can't be Stiegler.
It's something like that.
Stilgar.
I had the right letters, just the wrong order. He is absolutely convinced. And I think that's a lot of the levity comes from him in this movie. He's making most of, well, not jokes necessarily, but
I think that's intended to be funny.
Yeah.
Like, he's not making jokes, but it's even edited comedically, where something will happen, and then the cut to him and his friends being like, just like the prophecy said, like
as written.
That's just comedy.
Yeah.
That's all it is. because he had like a couple scenes in the first one. Mm-hmm. The scene where he goes to meet with the Atreides and he like spits on the ground.
Yeah.
He gets a couple kind of funny lines in that. But in this, yeah, he really, he's like probably like the second or third main character of this movie.
Yeah.
He has a lot of screen time.
He is in there a whole lot helping our little Paul find his way. One thing about that opening scene, I did, as cool as I thought it was, I think the uniforms that the bad guys wear are like the most poorly designed uniforms for hand-to-hand combat I've ever seen. They're like wearing like a hazmat suit on the top half. And like in these sword fights, you can tell they're just so limited. And I was like, who designed these for like foot soldiers who are going to be battling with swords? Nitpick number one, Nathan. Nitpick number one. I got to find them where I can get them.
You mentioned like the Fremen, how some believe the prophecy and some don't. I think it's actually really cool that a movie like this, it's in the source material, you know, it's in these books, but like it's really tackling head on this idea of what religion does to a people.
Yeah.
And also like the complexity of maybe the stories they tell aren't real, but also they can be used advantageously. Like that's the kind of like challenging idea that if I saw that when I was like a teenager, I'd be like, oh, I've never really considered things that way. When you're like 12 years old,
you know? Your parents never would have let you see this movie when you were a teenager.
I mean, that complexity is like, let's take for example the Star Wars prequels, like Revenge of the Sith. That's a very dark and violent movie. That's a lot for a kid. However, while Dune Part 2 is not that disturbing, like you're not watching like Anakin kill kids and stuff.
Yeah.
It is like treating the audience like adults in an even more meaningful way by like, it's asking you as the audience the question of like, what do you, like, do you think Paul Atreides, like, it doesn't spoon feed you whether he's good or bad. Or what his journey means. It really leaves that up to you to decide.
That's one thing I really actually loved about this movie, because throughout the movie, I think, especially in this movie, in the first one too, but there's, I mean, metaphorically, there's a lot of play with light and shadow, light and dark. And, you know, you have like these cracks of light coming through the ceilings of these temples or like these holes coming through. And it's always kind of a play on light and dark. And then you kind of think to yourself, or at least I did, like, okay, you know, good, bad, light, dark. And then you think like, who is good and who is bad in this? And like, is the Bene Gesserit really bad? Are they doing what's best for the world? Are they doing what's best for most people? Or is Paul going to be on the right side of history when he does all these things? Like, it's very, I hate using the word nebulous, but it's very nebulous. Like, depending on where you're standing, it looks a lot different for all these characters. And I loved that it wasn't just like a good guys, bad guys, you know?
And what big blockbusters are telling stories like that? Mm-hmm. Even something like Star Wars, the most morally complex they get is, like, at a couple points, the Jedi are, like, criticized. Like, maybe they're overstepping. Maybe they're, like, exerting too much power. That's about it. Like, it's still very clear-cut.
Yes.
Who is good and who is bad. And that's classic storytelling, is the heroes and the villains. It's just more, it's more, like, emotional work to try to interpret this for yourself.
Yes.
Because like a movie like Oppenheimer, which I love for the same reason, it says like, this stuff is so messy and we're going to show you some stuff that's incredible, but also we're going to make you think about what's lying underneath.
Yes.
And that's part of why this movie stays in my mind so much, is because I'm like, this is a book that was written in like, I think the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And you're immediately drawing parallels to things happening right now in the real world.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's, I think for that reason, this is going to be a timeless series of movies that's going to forever say something to future generations.
Yes, it's that there's people operate, we, most of us operate in the gray. And it's like, I think it's the Reverend Mother who says, you know, when Rebecca Ferguson towards the end of the movie is like, you chose the wrong side, because, you know, her and Paul have, you know, won for now, I guess. And the Reverend Mother says, you of all people should know there are no sides. And you're just like, hell yeah. Like,
Great.
It's so good. Yeah. I love that aspect of it. It's just, it's a rare breath of fresh air, I think, to get something like that, especially for a movie of this scale and with like a very clear in the first movie, I guess, a very clear protagonist in Paul. And now it's kind of like, is he going to be good?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a single person in this cast. Maybe Josh Brolin. Like, he's like the North Star.
Yeah.
Who, like...
The good guys usually go for the nukes first.
Well, like, historically. That is a great point. Like, yeah. He's probably the most traditionally, quote-unquote, good human in this. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he's the one who instantly, like, turns to destruction.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a person in this cast who...
Maybe Florence, but I still... She seems like somebody... Well, this is why there's going to be a third, and I need to know more about...
But she, along with the Bene Gesserit, like, they're all in on the whole, like, pitting these...
But you can kind of see that hint of rebellion in her.
Where, well, of like, course.
She doesn't think what the Bene Gesserit are doing is right.
Yeah.
So who knows, I guess. And that's what makes it... It does. It makes you... And maybe that's why it goes by so fast, this runtime, is because you're constantly recalculating where these people stand and what their motives are and what they're going to do next. And 99% of the time, they don't do any of the things you thought they were going to do next. So you have to recalculate everything again. And that's just, I mean, I was at 100% brain utilization, I think, during most of this movie, mainly for my eyes to just see the whole giant screen.
And I promise I'll stop comparing it to Star Wars. It's a natural comparison.
Yeah,
like Star Wars draws so much inspiration from Dune, and now these movies feel like they're drawing inspiration from Star. Like, it's a whole chicken or the egg thing.
Yeah.
But like, the rebels in Star Wars are just like, they're a purely aspirational group of people.
Yep.
And it's not until a show like Andor, which came out last year, that actually interrogates, like, to be a rebel, a true revolution requires you to do very morally gray things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, there is no revolution in which the revolters are just, like, good, nice people who don't
like
do anything
do
wrong.
Like,
it's not how revolution works.
No.
And similarly, this movie, like, the Fremen, they are the oppressed.
Yep.
And they are fighting back against their oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so exciting seeing how that war plays out, but still, like, it's a war.
Yeah.
No one has their hands clean in
blood
all
everywhere.
Of this.
Yeah.
I feel like last Star Wars mentioned for at least 5 minutes.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
You know, I was a kid when the prequels came out. Like, mm-hmm. when Phantom Menace came out, I was like 5 years old. Like, mm-hmm. I barely understood anything about the world.
Yep.
But like, I feel like these movies, these Dune movies, fulfill the promise that the Star Wars prequels were supposed to. Like,
Like,
what I wanted from those movies when I was a kid was Anakin's internal journey and, like, how the Clone Wars could, like, result in a world like the one that we see in the original trilogy of Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see, like, what is that romance like? All those aspects of the Star Wars prequels were pretty big letdowns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And while there's so much cool world building... Also, like, the tech, the CGI at that time, like, 20 years ago, just wasn't...
Yeah.
It just didn't cut it. And now,
mm-hmm.
we have CGI. I don't know what CGI in this movie. I don't know what is CGI. Yeah. I don't know what is, like, green screen composite. I don't know what's real.
Just like Argyle.
It is all seamlessly put together. And you believe the scale of this movie in a way that you just don't. And... Anything, any other sci-fi epic, you don't buy.
I fully agree with that. And I think that's, again, props to Greg Fraser for how he frames so much of it. But yeah, I was trying to remember because I had noted in my head, like, CGI looked bad, and then I couldn't remember what looked bad, and I wasn't going to bring up that point because I knew you'd be like, what looked bad, you son of a bitch?
Well, I remember in the first one, there was like that one shot in a dream of his face that looked
off. Oh, in the helmet? Oh my God. I was so happy. There was one shot of Zendaya that looked very similar to that shot in this movie.
But way better.
Way, like, actually looked like her face. And I was like, thank God they got it right. I was like, so in my head, I'm like, they clearly did this to show, like, hey guys, we learned. It was like the same shot, but with her and like her face actually framed perfectly. You're talking about everyone having blood on their hands, and speaking of dirty hands, I was so happy to see the Baron dipped into vats of things again. That is one of my favorite parts of the first one, is just him oiled up, like, wiping his face with his giant fucking hands and just popping out of ooze all the time. Like, what a life that guy. He probably feels great. I imagine floating around, being waited on, and just doing whatever you want. What a guy, you know? And I think as much as I love all of those scenes with him, just because he's breathtaking to look at, the scale of him alone, just like the movie is breathtaking, his demise on the stairs, clawing for the throne, like, I'm getting goosies just thinking about it right now. I was like, what a fucking place for him to... he dies. Yeah, yeah, he dies. Yeah, he puts the knife in his neck.
And that is one of the many moments that is an incredible payoff to a setup.
Yes.
That plays out not in a corny way at all. Like, no. It plays out, I guess it's how you want it, so in that way it's kind of predictable, mm-hmm. but it's still... You feel, like, electrified you do. When it happens.
You really do. I think you're fully spot on. That whole scene is just electrifying for the most part.
I think maybe we should, instead of trying to, like, go through piece by piece this movie, maybe, like, break it into the Harkonnens.
Yeah, let's
like,
talk
Harkonnens. We have not mentioned the name Austin Butler as Fade Rautha.
What, I mean, his intro in this movie is phenomenal. I do think he slices too many throats. At a certain point, I was like, how many times is he doing this a day? I can forgive
three or four.
Yeah.
But eight or nine.
Eight or nine, I just don't know. But that, like, his intro and the colors, I mean, that were fully saturated for the first hour. He comes in sooner than that, probably a half hour.
I would say an hour, probably.
Fully saturated, and then it cuts to him and his intro, and it's just sucked dry of all color and all hope and joy and happiness and emotion, and it's just black and white, baby. And it's oof.
And you realize, like, most black and white movies, there's still a slight tint of color, like a little bit of orangish or bluish.
Yeah.
They color corrected this to be completely zero color. It makes you uncomfortable.
It does.
Like, nothing should look like this.
Well, and it's his black teeth with his totally white shaved head, like, and that those look. He looks alien. Like, he looks alien.
Truly alien.
It is scary. And I told my mom he was in this movie, and she was like, "What is Dune 2? I don't know what that is." And I go, "Well, Austin Butler's in it." She goes, "Oh, he's one of the best Elvis." And I was like, "Yeah, you should see it, Ma." And she would literally die from a heart attack if she saw him in this movie. But the whole arena scene with him is just I could watch that for the rest of my life. Like, the scale of that scene alone, it's like the Colosseum, but 20 times as big, 20 times as epic. Just where the Baron sits compared to where, you know, the people fight. Like, it is, and the little, like, Riddler guys with the poker poles is coming out of the darkness. You don't even see them. Like, there's just reveal after reveal after reveal of little bits of this world for the whole... It's mesmerizing. That scene, I think the theater was totally silent during... Even your icy guy gave it a break.
It was a theater of hundreds of people who were just locked in.
Yeah.
It's the kind of scene that, like... This is why giant movie screens exist.
Absolutely.
Is to watch this, to be transported there.
And it does such a good job. You know, in the first one, I think it's Josh Brolin who says, you know, you haven't seen a Harkonnen. I know them. They're not even human.
They're brutal.
And, like, you know, you think of the Colosseum in Rome and, like, you think, God, how brutal was that? You know, they built this three-story thing. And these people have built this thing that's bigger than any other arena probably on any planet in the world to watch people kill each other, because they are just these brutal, bloodthirsty killing machines. And it just is such a great way to say, it's not just the Harkonnens, you know, who are psycho killers. Mm-hmm. Everyone who is a Harkonnen or who lives on this planet, like, is way into just watching people fucking mutilate each other too. It's like, it does so much. It does so much. One building does so much. It's insane.
So that Harkonnen instinct, what did you think of the big reveal that Lady Jessica is the son of Baron Harkonnen, making Paul
his
grandson?
I didn't like that. I mean, that's probably how I'm assuming that's how the book goes.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know how to feel about it. Like, I don't know.
He's half Harkonnen. Sure, cool.
I think it's, to me, it was out of left field. However, I then remembered that it's very clearly set up that the Bene Gesserit are mixing bloodlines.
Well, when you see Leah Seydoux, who goes after Austin Butler.
That scene was fantastic.
Yeah, walking down that hallway with those two. And yeah, absolutely fantastic. But that's when you kind of realize, like, oh shit, they're doing a lot more planning than we thought. Like, they've really been doing
that. Some would say family planning.
It's even in their conversations with Florence. I don't remember her character's name, and I'm not going to. When she's talking about, like, did you plan, you know, to end the Atreides line? And she's like, we've been, you know, monitoring the bloodline for centuries, and they were getting to, like, they literally are just manipulating everyone and getting any, like, it's the level of meticulous planning they're doing is so astounding for centuries and centuries.
And I just love that it comes down to, like, all right, so he's horny,
yeah,
and he's jealous,
yeah,
and we can control him that way.
Perfect.
The most powerful people in the universe, yep. Some of them. We just gotta, you know.
Lust, man. It's a powerful, powerful thing. Yeah. What does she say? He's easily sexually vulnerable is the line I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Like, something like that. And you're like, oh yeah, he's definitely a little horny creep. Like, first off, the pet situation. He's got, like, three cannibals he keeps in his room. We find out that the Baron keeps some freakish spider thing as a pet too, which is on, like, I love that that's just never, like, touched on again. Just like, here's his little creepy spider thing he keeps like a dog. Okay. And then when Austin is at the end, like, you know, any special privileges or special tasks for your pet, when he sees her and look at Zendaya. Oh, I was like, what? This guy's just a sick fuck.
Okay. We have to talk about, if the romance didn't work for you, you really didn't feel it in the last scene. You did not feel.
Yeah, I feel
heartbreak.
I felt her heartbreak.
Yeah,
for sure.
If you didn't feel a relationship there, the chemistry, you wouldn't feel that.
No. That's totally not correct. I feel like you can act well in one scene and you can act poorly in a bunch of other scenes. It's not that I think they're acting poorly. I just don't see the connection or sparks between them at all. Even in the scene where they're on top of each other, it just seems like two people who accidentally fell on top of each other and are breathing heavily.
When they were, like, sitting on the dune and they kissed, were you just rolling your eyes at that?
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know who I don't believe in it, but one, it just didn't feel like that would happen if there wasn't a camera and somebody I just didn't buy into it. The last scene, you see the heartbreak for sure, but that's her having a great reaction to devastating news. And it doesn't have to be about love. That's just a great reaction for her when she hears devastating news. I still don't fully buy the chemistry. I don't know. Maybe I will on the second watch. Maybe I will. Yeah, I need that Timmy C blocker. I need to take like a,
yeah. Well, I mean, Zendaya too, like she's such a real world image and personality. And it's like, maybe it's hard to separate that too.
Yeah.
I just, it really, really worked for me. I was very,
I think that scene was the first time it worked for me.
For me, that scene was so stirring because it had been set up so well. I think that if you try to do that same exact scene with a romance that I didn't buy into, I wouldn't have cared that much, but it made that climax. So like my heartstrings were just being yanked on.
Don't you think it also falls into the trope of like the protagonist not just having a simple conversation with like a person he loves about strategy and what he's going to do? Because that's what drives me nuts about stuff like that. It's like he says, I'll love you forever. As long as I'm breathing, I'll love you. And then just goes and does this where like he's had so much time to think about this plan and what he's going to do to take the hand of her.
Well, I mean, that like, sounds like
half that conversation, an
extraordinarily
maybe
difficult thing to, say.
It would be, but it's better than fucking springing it on her in front of everyone. Like,
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I think someone in love might want to savor every second of that.
Fair.
I don't think that would actually alleviate anything. I think that means that she may have turned on him before that because she's like, well, screw you if you're going to do this.
Yeah, but then that's even more manipulative to just be juicing it as much as you can and then dumping it.
I don't see it as manipulative. I see it as, to him, it's also the most painful thing he can do is to betray her like that. Mm. Yet he knows his destiny. He knows that he has to do that.
Yeah.
Like that's the first moment where I saw his father in him. Mm. That he does something incredibly difficult because he knows that he has to step up to the plate. Like, he's the only one who can fix it. It's only because he does that that he gets out of there alive.
Yeah.
Where we're left off is that the Emperor now bows to him. Mm-hmm. The Harkonnens are dead. Mm-hmm. And the Fremen support him in this war.
Did Lea Seydoux imply, and I went to the bathroom. She's pregnant with Austin Butler's son, will be a Harkonnen.
I don't mean the Harkonnens are like completely gone, the but main like ones, yeah. they're essentially defeated.
Yes.
All the antagonists who we knew are gone.
Yeah. Do you think this movie has the most in utero shots of any other movie?
It is such an interesting choice to like, it's a character.
Yeah.
It's a full on, it becomes an actual adult human at one point with the Anya Taylor-Joy reveal, which is incredible.
Three seconds.
Literally a shot.
Yeah.
A shot. And the fact that like for the last couple of weeks, she showed up at the red carpet because it was going to leak, of course.
Yeah.
Everyone's speculating, oh, she's going to be one of the other sisters. Who's she going to be? She's an A shot.
Yeah. She's a baby.
I'm sure she'll be in future movies and I'm excited to see that. But yes, the in utero, the visualization of the growing baby and like when the poison goes in there.
Yeah.
Just the visual style of those shots. Yeah. It's fascinating.
It reminded me of like Nolan and Oppenheimer with atomic explosions, but like with human life growing. Like they did it just in such a cool way. It pops up and you're not really given much context. It comes up early and you see like a tiny little fetal looking thing and you're like, huh. And it just kind of like leaves. And then like you come back to it and it's grown a bit and eventually it takes the poison and can see, or becomes, you know, coherent enough to talk to its mother, which is wild and a super fucking cool, storytelling device. But the first time it popped on screen, I was like, is that like a, like what the hell, what is that, like an alien, somebody's growing an alien, or what the hell's going on? Like, it's really, you don't know how to connect it to the plot right away, and then you're like, oh shit, okay, all right, just so cool the way they did it. I loved it.
When Paul has his vision of his sister, you know, we don't see much of that experience that he has, but he comes out of it a new person.
Mm-hmm.
That whole idea of like in that moment, he saw everything. It's like they set up in the first movie. He conquers time and space. Yeah. Like he's by doing that, he then becomes the actual Messiah who he doesn't believe that he is, but who he's promised. Everyone thinks he's promised to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting to think about like being able to see everything. What that would do to your psyche, you could transcend.
Oh yeah!
Like you, even if that power is momentary, and you're brought back into the present, you could become something that no human has ever been.
You can manipulate anything the way you want it to be.
That's one of those ideas that's been lodged in my brain since I saw this.
Imagine if you weren't fully grown, you got that when you were in utero. Think how much you could use that throughout your life.
Yeah,
very impressive. And I don't think it really like landed with me, like how much detail when they say you can see everything, like is it like Dune 1 where you're seeing things that might not actually happen and some things that do happen and things like that? And then when they get to kind of the, you know, assembly of all the Fremen and they're in that sick ass cave with like light coming down the circle in the middle, and he's like literally telling people what their grandma like said to him, you know, years ago to convince them, you're like, oh shit, he can really get into the minutia of everything from like all time. Like that's pretty fucking wild. And then I started thinking like, wow, this is going to be, that's when I like got really invested in like, oh shit, he's going to do a lot of shit. Like this movie left me wanting more, but in the best way,
And that transformation into that Messiah figure, to me, it feels much closer to what an actual person like that would do in the world, as opposed to like the like biblical stories were told about how like someone
100%.
Once did that. It's like you could harness that power and completely change everything.
Yes.
And the possibility of what lies ahead in the next movie or beyond, what's so interesting is all of the villains who we've known up until this point are either dead mm-hmm. or bowing to him.
Yeah.
All that we know is that there's other houses that are coming. Yeah. We don't even know what kind of people they are, where they come from.
I'm very excited to find out.
But just the infinite possibility. Yeah.
It really puts it into scope. Like, this is like a family versus family feud that we've been watching for two movies, uh-huh. you know? And like, think of how many other people are involved in this like federation or empire, whatever it is. It gets you really excited because if these two are so different and there's 10 more or 20 more or 100 more, like, there's going to be such drastic differences between them that it's going to give me another Dune 1, but as Dune 3, just to set the stage for like six more worlds. That's what I want.
I think Warner Brothers as a corporation, I think this second movie is going to print money.
Oh, yeah.
And they're probably going to be like, so how do we turn this into like a 9-movie universe?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am okay with it as well.
Actually. I mean, they're doing the Bene Gesserit HBO series.
Are they?
Yeah, I think it's coming out later this year.
Dang.
It's been in production for a while.
Yeah.
But I think as long as there's such capable filmmakers as Denis Villeneuve,
mm-hmm.
I mean, this vision that he had for this world,
yeah.
I think he deserves to be a blank check director for the foreseeable future.
Agreed.
Do you know what he's doing next?
It's
with Zendaya?
No.
As the lead? No. Cleopatra.
Ooh, that'll be a blast.
I can't wait. Like, that'll be a blast. This kind of filmmaking.
Keep that man in the desert. Keep him in the desert, I'm telling you.
This filmmaking, but for like an actual period piece.
Yeah.
God, I can't
just
wait.
Just the way he tells the story. That's going to be, I'm very excited.
Imagine what the costumes on Zendaya are going to be.
She's going to look, people will have her up as Cleopatra on their dorm walls. I take it back. Not this. We haven't talked about Christopher Walken at all, who is a minor role, but yeah. I thought he did great.
I thought so too.
I thought he would take me out of it, but I think he really like, it's a very subtle role, and he doesn't have a ton of lines, but like, I was like, okay, I buy him as an old aging kind of dying emperor. One thing that I think is a huge component of the first Dune that I know we both loved, and that when I left this one, I thought, I don't really recall much of it.
I know what you're going to say.
The score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very surprising how kind of reined in it is.
Very.
The more wild stuff in this one is really just motifs from the first movie. Like, there's a few of like,
Yep.
But especially during like the romantic parts and with the Fremen, it's actually very traditional movie score music.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. I was very surprised because the credits were rolling and we were kind of listening to the music and I was like, I can't think of like one stand up. Like in the first one, you get the bagpipes, you get like the throat guy, and then there's moments where the music is almost the focus. And this one, there's none of that. And I was like kind of taken aback by that because it was such a huge part of the first one. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be much more prominent in this one, and maybe that's what adds to like my enjoyment of this one first time around is that. I mean, I fucking love that bagpipe scene. And I thought about that for a long time during my first viewing of it because it was so good. And I think it helps you focus more on the plot and the dialogue and what is actually happening on the screen as opposed to like, oh, the fucking Zimmer is just tearing it up again. But yeah, I just thought it was a really curious choice.
You're less impressed, but it also serves the story better. So like, maybe that's,
I think it's good.
He's doing his job better than before.
Yeah. Yeah. I should probably listen to it. I don't know if it's out yet, but
it is. Yeah. I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah.
I'm still in that, like
basking in the glow of it all.
At work today, I actually listened to the Dune Part 1 music and I started to go to Part 2 and I was like, I can't do it because I'm just going to stand there again.
It's going to be drooling
at my desk. For a solid hour and a half.
Well, I'm excited to see if it stands up to the first one once you listen to it. I think if I had to choose like one shot that I absolutely loved and would like, if I could frame like a 3-second loop of a shot, it would be this shot. It's Timmy C. walking through a sea of people.
I knew it.
And just the crowd is just slightly undulating and moving, and you see he's carving his own path. But it's a shot that literally took my breath away in the theater. I was astounded by that shot. It looks so it just doesn't seem it looks like you're looking at like a petri dish with like or like through a microscope at something, you know, and it's and when you realize the scale of it, it's just mind-blowing. It is so gorgeous. I would frame it on my wall if I could.
I love it so much. It's it's like both the sheer scale of it and also the abstract simplicity of it. Like, I don't know how visual artists conceive of such a thing.
I don't know how they pull it off. I mean, like, do you think a lot of that's CGI or is because the number of people in that shot is just mind-blowing.
I've come to accept that with CGI, if you can't tell,
fuck it.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I'm a harsh critic of CGI. Like there's some movies where I'm like, wow, that looked terrible, and then other people are like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
There's hardly anything in these movies that does I don't just completely buy.
Yeah.
Like when they're like attacking the giant spice harvester, that whole action set piece. Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely thrilling start to finish. But also like there's not a moment where I even consider like, wait, is this are they on a green screen?
Yeah.
Are they like is this just like a
I
fake
didn't think green screen once during this movie.
I buy that was Timothy Chalamet standing next to a 200-foot tall machine that harvests spice on a real place called Arrakis.
Yeah. that's I might not have gone that far, but I definitely bought into a lot of it being practical. I mean, it's just so well put together. Sandworms looked great. Second nitpick, Nathan, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this. The sandworm riding was just way too smooth for me. Like, you're going to feel some bumps and humps and, you know, lumps. Like, they're all just, like, not moving at all on top of the sandworms. And how are you going to load up a whole fucking caravan on one of those things? That was my, like, oh, we just all stand here and it comes right here and pfft, we're off.
Well, Paul struggles. He's a newbie.
Yeah.
They have generations of experience. They're experts. I think that when you're gliding on sand, what's the resistance?
I think gliding is
sand.
Gliding is there's so. Have you ever tried to slide across sand?
No, I'm not a massive sandworm.
I know.
To a sandworm, that's like if you put your finger through like the sand of an hourglass. Like it's that much friction.
I was wondering too. Do sandworms as they go? Do they ingest and then eject the sand out of the back as like a propulsion device?
They definitely ingest some. I don't know if they're shitting sand to go faster.
They have to be putting it out. They can't just be taking all that in because they're taking in a ton of sand. I thought you'd think they could like shut their mouth for a second, but I don't think they can. Too many teeth. Or maybe that's how they get the swords is when they finally try to shut their mouth, the teeth fall out.
They say, I got one.
Hey.
I'm going to kill Fade Rautha with this. I can't believe we haven't even mentioned the sandworms really until now, because both scenes, when he wrangles the sandworm, when he gets on top of it.
I love how they call it like a grandmother or a grandfather sandworm. Like when things are really big, they call them grandmother or grandfather things. And I was like, that's great.
And that's one of those action set pieces that the sand flying in the screen and his struggle on it, like... How did they make you believe that is like a 1,000-foot long creature flying through the desert and that he's actually, how do they do that? I don't know how they make such a thing, but they did. And I was on the edge of my seat during his scene. And then later during the triple battle attack. When it burst through the sand
fucking
cloud,
sweet.
I felt my heart. Like, actually escape out of my throat and then come back in.
Yeah.
In that shot.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, it was astounding. It was very... That whole battle sequence is, like, Ridley Scott-level battle sequence. Like
it's up there with the best battles in film ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's up there with Lord of the Rings and with all of the best, like... It's up there.
It's up there. It's the dog at the table waiting for scraps with the Lord of the Rings. No, that whole battle is an absolute blast to watch. I think that battle scene being top tier is similar to Florence Pugh's fits being absolutely top tier. Every costume Amazing. She's in this movie, you're like, holy shit, Flo. That is just, they're all incredibly unique. More so than anyone else in any of the Dune movies, I feel like. She's just busting out these phenomenal fits every day. But I was like, the one in the final scene too was
the chainmail.
Oh,
what a look. I mean, her and Rebecca Ferguson in the first movie,
and in this movie.
Well, too. But in the first movie, mostly like those are the only characters who are. It's just opulence, right? They're just rich, and they don't have like they don't have to dress like in a utilitarian way.
Yeah.
They're just dressed in a cool way, and their outfits are incredible. Rebecca Ferguson, most of this movie, is in the same outfit because she's traveling with the Fremen. And then at the end, her and the... There's, like, multiple of, like, the Reverend Mothers who are wearing the giant headpiece with the draping beads.
It's it's a fucking killer look.
Looks so good.
Oh, it looks so good. Did you see... this is not even podcast-worthy, but her outfit at the premiere. Yes. Like, oh, my God.
I saw it shared once or twice. It
should be illegal to look that good.
We need to talk about... So, this movie was supposed to come out back in the fall.
Well, it's funny. When you played the clip... You were like, you know, it's coming out in 2023. And I was like, oh my God.
It was going to be, I think, in October of last year.
You had so many more years to sweeten me to Dune. And I think you've poisoned my mind, Nathan. I think you've made me too sweet on it.
It was because of the actor's strike, which was still going on in the fall, that the studio decided to push it to this year. Mm-hmm. When that happened, I remember being like, I get it. But like, seriously, this movie speaks for itself. Like, just release the movie. After having seen the press tour for the last month, that was the best decision.
Yeah.
Like, all the marketing they need for this movie is every day I check Instagram and Zendaya is in a new outfit. I'm like, what are these events they're even going to?
It is.
And the fashion is incredible. And they're dressed otherworldly. Like, it's thematic with the movie. It's not just a nice suit for the sake of looking
they're
nice.
They're all relating to Dune.
Yes.
And it is, I think, overall the most attractive cast maybe in movie history, objectively.
I think even beyond the movie's quality, this will be looked back on as like a definitive movie of our time because this is the four stars.
Yeah.
Like, who else is as big as these four? And like, who in terms of like millennials?
Are you saying
Flo, Austin Butler, Timmy, and Zendaya?
Nobody.
I don't
get a little Tom Holland in there, man.
Yeah, like maybe some...
In that generation, but...
Like right now, like Barry Keoghan's hot.
Barry Keoghan's hot. Paul Mescal's a little hot, but that's on the indie scene.
They just got the four biggest.
It's like Marlon Brando, Marilyn Monroe, and two other really attractive old movie stars. All in one movie, and they all look great. And yeah, that's... Every day, you're right. Every day, we get new outfits of them all. And that's going to stop now. Which is sad to think about. We won't get new outfits and things every day from them. But we can just watch Dune 2 again.
You know what's really funny? Florence Pugh has been on like a nonstop press tour from Oppenheimer to Dune. Her last year has just been like looking great on the red carpet and being great in movies. And she apparently said today, or at the premiere or something, that she's leaving right now to start filming Thunderbolts.
Jesus Christ.
The Marvel movie.
Wow.
And what a shift.
Yeah, from great films to fodder for the masses. What else, Nathan? Anything else? We've covered a lot of it. Obviously, there's a ton that we haven't covered.
We're going to remember like hours worth of movie that we didn't even touch on.
I think we both recommend people go see this movie.
I cannot Nathan. Recommend higher.
Nathan recommends quitting your job to go every day.
Quitting your job
multiple times
to just stand there, and then go see this movie.
It's perfect. I still think I like the first one better, Nathan. But this conversation alone,
I absolutely love the first one, and I actually, in a strange way, even though I liked the second one more, I actually now like the first one even more than I already did, because it gives me a new appreciation for. Just like the patience
of it all. It's such a unique movie. Yeah. It's such a unique movie.
And it's I really think it's only because they put so much work into that atmosphere of it all that you're able to keep up with such a jam-packed movie like this one.
Yeah.
Like if they tried kind of splitting up the action equally among both movies, I don't know if it
would
have worked
less.
As well.
It would work less for sure. It would probably still work, but it would have worked much less. And I think that's why I like the first one better. I don't know.
You know, you mentioned that as soon as you left the theater, you wanted to watch the second one again.
I did.
I had just watched the first one last week. Mm-hmm. After watching the second one, I now want to watch the first one.
Yeah.
And then the second one.
Yeah.
And then probably the first one, and then probably the second one.
Nathan, I know that the number of unique movies you watch this year is going to be much lower than years past because you will be duning it up so hard. Duning. Basically gooning, but duning. Yeah. I mean, they're good. They're good. They're good movies, you know?
Make the call right now.
Mm.
Does any... I want to make this interesting because we don't even know what the weekend numbers are going to look like, let alone how it's what it's going to do for months.
Is Argyle still in theaters? That's going to pull some away. That's going to really affect my answer. There's no other movies out right now.
Like, well, no. Right now, it's going to dominate.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask you is, like, do you think anything this year will be as big?
I mean, anyone but you is raking in cash for some fucking reason.
Look up right now, like summer or just 2024 movies, and just you tell me.
All right, let's see.
I think it's very possible that this is the biggest of the year.
There's some big ones coming out though.
I know.
Deadpool, I think, would be the one that could possibly beat it. Looking at all the other ones, I don't think Planet of the Apes going to do... Gladiator 2, but that probably... Those would be the two I think have the best chance of possibly making a run at it.
Those and Twisters?
Twister's not going to do it. I'd bet on Deadpool. I mean, that Marvel poll, and Deadpool always performs really well.
I think that Dune Part 2 is going to have an Oppenheimer-like run.
Just say... Well...
The IMAX theater
What other movie are you going to put on an IMAX screen? If I'm a theater owner or manager, I'm showing that as much as I can on my IMAX screen, and that's
it's going to be a month, I think.
I don't care if Deadpool comes out. That's not getting IMAX. That can have all the other theaters. There's no reason that needs to be on IMAX. But yeah, I think those would be the other two. I'd love to see, like, Challengers or some other more indie ones. I'd love to see Gladiator 2 dominate, but... Really just doesn't have the same pull, it seems, for the box office as he used to. That one, just with the name and general.
I mean, as much as we like his recent work, is he putting out anything
new
that comes close to this?
In terms of innovation?
In terms of, you have to go see it right now. Like, what's the last thing he made that the masses were actually... I know it's Gladiator 2, but like...
Yeah, I don't know.
I
think that's got a lot of pull, though. I think it does. I really think it does. That's a movie people are going to be excited for.
So are you officially yes or no on Dune Part 2 being the biggest movie of the year?
Box office?
Yeah.
I think because it came out in fucking February, yeah. I think it's going to be the biggest one of the year.
Well, that doesn't mean that much.
Well, it kind of does.
Movies only play for like a few months.
Not this one. Not look at all the movies. I feel like movies now are staying in theaters longer than normal because there's like one showing a day of all these different movies when I go to look at showtimes now.
It's a beautiful thing.
It truly is. I really love it, actually.
I'm going to see this so many times.
Well, let me know. I'll go with you a couple more times. At least one more time. And I'm going to watch Dune 1 again, too. But yeah, I'll be seeing it again for sure. I feel obligated to. I'll really try to... Give Timmy a chance, a fair shake next time, just for you.
Is it? Could it possibly be time to wrap it up?
I think we're Dune. It's always the low hanging fruit you like the best, my friend.
Are you rushing or are you Duning?
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I don't think I have anything. My notes are pretty well covered. We'll come back next week, do another episode on Dune 2 after we watch it again. And then probably two or three more throughout the rest of the year.
What will be next, do you think? There's actually a lot of good stuff coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know when Civil War or the Planet of the Apes ones come out.
Civil War, they're saying, is like an IMAX movie.
I think I could see that being good. But Men has just ruined him for me. The movie Men really ruined my expectations for Alex Garland.
I'm going to read some highlights in the next upcoming weeks. Ricky Stenicki.
No. Isn't that coming out direct to streaming? That's going straight to... Okay.
Kung Fu Panda 4.
No. Can you read good ones?
Love Lies Bleeding.
I can't wait for
that's
that.
In a couple weeks.
I am probably most hyped for that, but nobody, well, not nobody, not many other people are.
The new Ghostbusters, you liked the last one.
Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man, you got to watch that. That was a good one.
Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney nun movie.
Yeah, nun movies I think are saturated right now. I think we're saturated with nun movies. But Sydney Sweeney clearly has a pull based on anyone but you doing 200 million.
She has a pull. Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah, that's going to be a banger. People are going to come out for that for sure.
That seems to me, so that's March 29th, which is a solid 4 weeks after Dune.
Yeah.
Do you think that takes the IMAX away? Might be the first one.
I think for like a week or two it would. But then Dune comes back for sure.
The week after that, Monkey Man.
I can't fucking wait for that movie. It's been so hard to avoid trailers for that, and I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Dev Patel, baby, just making his own action movie.
The next week, Civil War.
Yes.
Week after that, Sasquatch Sunset.
I can't wait for that either. That looks so weird.
Week after that, Challengers.
Oh, is this all April?
Yes.
What a month.
Week after that, The Fall Guy. And also the re-release of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Wow.
I cannot wait for that.
Man, summer movie wager is going to be interesting.
Week after that, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Then,
Wait, summer movie wager starts in May?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this is in the summer now.
Okay.
There's If, the Imaginary Friends movie that I'm not too keen on. Furiosa.
Yes, that's going to be... Ooh, that could take Dune out in many ways.
After that, we have... So, Challengers, Zendaya stock.
Yeah.
Only going up.
Yeah.
Austin Butler stock, The Bike Riders.
Yeah.
It's coming out in June.
Yep.
Give me that.
Yeah.
I should have got that.
I'm excited to see what accent he has in that one.
It's got to be something.
Hey, little mama.
After that, A Quiet Place, Day One. Yeah. I'm not skipping a week here.
Don't.
Every weekend is...
This is...
Horizon and American Saga, the Kevin Costner.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Passion
Trailer
Project.
Just released for that one. Looks pretty good.
Despicable Me 4, let's go.
Yeah.
Long Legs, that horror movie with the incredible
creepy
marketing.
Creepy as hell, yeah.
Twisters, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay.
Borderlands. I skipped a week there, but... Yeah. Alien Romulus.
Wow. I didn't know there's a new Alien.
This is going to be a consistent year.
See, we had such a rough year of gaps last year, and now we're just going to be gluttons. Gluttons for months at a time.
Slow but steady gluttons, you know.
Invest in AMC A-List now, so you can see 3 movies a week. Otherwise, you are going to miss out.
I've been maxing out.
We've had the fucking Dune ticket for months. I still have another ticket that's...
We're seeing The Lighthouse.
The Lighthouse this week. And then we had The Lobster last week. Like, yeah, I've been maxed out too, and it's driving me nuts. I've paid for movies. I hate that. It's good. It's good for cinema. Pay for movies. Maybe people shouldn't get A-List. Keep paying full price for your tickets.
Yeah, everyone else subsidize our memberships.
Correct. Thank you.
I would say to the movie studios, thank you dearly.
Mm-hmm.
To the fast food restaurants...
Step it up.
Get with the program.
Step it up. Look at what people have done to film. And you can't even put pepperonis on a piece of chicken, right?
Dune only costs $150, $200 million.
How much does a cheetah cost? A dollar? Get it right. Double that budget, at least.
Speaking of disappointing crap, you can find all of our episodes... on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere podcasts are found.
Leave us a review if you want to support the show. It's the best way to kind of give us a little boost, or just tell all your friends about Fast Food Film Friends and how much you love it, and post about it and tweet about it and be real about it. Be real about it.
Send us the Be Reels.
Yeah,
add us on Be Real.
We took
one while halfway through this pizza.
Yeah.
Covered in sauce.
Yep. But yeah, do all that. Get your very own merch at fastfoodfilmfriends.com.
Also, you can find Kevin's lukewarm takes on Instagram at fastfoodfilmfriends, Twitter at FFFFpodcast. Send us an email.
Yeah.
fastfoodfilmfriends@gmail.com. Let us know, what are you most excited for this year?
We got a lot of options, so tell us which ones we should pick.
And get in on that bet. Do you think Dune Part 2 is going to be the biggest one of the year? We'll see.
I'm
saying yes. Kevin's saying no.
I'm not saying no.
Thumbs up or thumbs down? Hit me.
You're gladiator two-ing me right now.
That's right.
You got to wait a long time like Joaquin does in the first one.
Where's it going? It's teetering. Oh, it's going. Oh, well, and down.
I think Deadpool's going to take it. I think Deadpool's going to take
it. We bet $1,000 on that. That's crazy.
Well, you know, I don't even look at the price.
Until Kevin goes bankrupt.
Farewell.